Let me paint a picture.
Rob, this is an audio program, okay? This analogy's not going to work because it's a visual thing.
The picture is any old midday shift. Nothing fancy going on. No chests a-cracking, no scopes a-scoping. An 80-year-old woman comes in after a mechanical fall. She has a pelvic fracture. She denies dysuria. There's no urgency, frequency. She's afebrile. She's actually pretty healthy otherwise. And as part of her workup, she gets a urinalysis, and it shows a urinalysis showing 10 to 15 white cells per high power field and bacteria. Hey ho, diagnosis made. Not only does she have a pelvic fracture, she also has a UTI, and that UTI, that probably even caused her fall. She's up with a walker and out the door with her script of antibiotics. Yet again, you, my friend, have saved the day. Am I right? Am I right?
Oh, Rob. You were so close to doing a good job.
And that, my friends, is the voice of Dr. Dave Glazer. Dave is double boarded in IM and EM, practices emergency medicine at St. Joseph Hospital in Denver, Colorado, and he taught me how to understand ABGs, toxic alcohols, and pretty much everything there was to learn in emergency medicine because Dave was one of my attendings back in the, I won't even say what decade it was. Dave, well, it's been a good 15 years since we've spoken, but you look as fresh as a baby's bottom.
Happily, we're only doing the audio Skype, and you can't see how I really look. The decades haven't been so kind.
We have Dave on the show because he has become well known for his education in the proper and improper use of antibiotics in the ED, and no better place to start than asymptomatic bacteria. But what is that? Say I have two 80-year-old patients side by side. They both just had pelvic fractures. Both have 3+ bacteria and 15 white cells per high power field. One has been having dysuria. The other has not. Does it really make a difference? Don't they both have same things? Don't they both just have UTIs? One can just feel it?
I think the problem is that we have viewed UTI as a lab diagnosis and have largely tried to concern ourselves with, is it upper tract or is it lower tract? And kind of forgetting that the differential of a positive UA also includes asymptomatic bacteria, which really is a misnomer because it sounds like it's just bacteria in the urine. But the majority of the times, it also goes along with pyuria. And I think most of us have been trained and have assumed over the years that if you're seeing white cells and you're seeing bacteria in the urine, it's an infection. And we have traditionally felt the need to tie it into any clinical signs or symptoms. And that's just plain wrong.
So what then is and what is not a UTI? And just to be clear here, we're talking about adults and not kids.
Yeah, we're talking about adults. And the older you get, the more common is asymptomatic bacteria. The New England Journal published a paper a number of years ago looking at just young sexually active women. They found about a 5% incidence of asymptomatic bacteria. And that rate increases over time, meaning as people get older. So if you look at just older but even healthy community-dwelling women, up to 20% of them will have asymptomatic bacteria. And even 15% or so of men who are over the age of 75 will have it. And then if you enter the long-term care population, the incidence can go up to 50% of women and 40% of men. So it's a very common condition. And really what it is it's bacteria with or without white cells in the urine, but not an infection.
Wait. Before we move on, let's not gloss over those numbers. This bears a little bit of repeating. 1 in 5 older women will have asymptomatic bacteriuria, and about 1 in 7 men will have it. In nursing home patients, it's basically a coin flip. 50% of women and 40% of men will have bacteriuria when they're at baseline. This basically renders the UA fairly worthless in this population. But why are those bacteria there to begin with?
These are just commensal bacteria that live in happy harmony in many ways in the bladder of these people. It's not continuous, so people clear their bacteria frequently only to get it again commonly as well. You asked, what is a UTI? So a UTI is essentially a positive UA, which in most studies is defined as actually a positive urine culture, but in the emergency department, of course, we don't have the benefit of a culture. We have to project forward in time and imagine whether our UA is going to be positive with a culture, and we do that by looking at generally white cells. bacteria, maybe leukocyte esterase. But most people have defined for the past 30 or more years UTI as a positive UA, meaning at least 10 white blood cells per high power field, and bacteria, and then ultimately a positive culture. But only if you also have signs and symptoms of a urinary tract infection. You really need that positive urine plus something in the other category, something clinical to hang your UTI hat on.
Well, it could be maybe a little ultramental status in the older patient, not necessarily GU symptoms.
You do get into dirtier territory there. So I think what we have traditionally done, like you pointed out in your opening clinical scenario, is even in the alert, otherwise healthy population, if they're complaining of almost anything, so in that case it was a fall, other times they're maybe a little dizzy or they feel a little weak or they've got some nausea, and then we find this vaguely positive UA, we're often very happy to call it a UTI and ascribe their vague non-urinary type symptoms to the positive UA and treat as an infection. And certainly if you've got the older population who are presenting acutely sick, you know, they're febrile, they're having chills, they're maybe hypotensive, tachycardic, at a white count, any number of, they might not mount specific urinary tract symptoms, but you need something in the otherwise healthy, alert, normal population to really call it a UTI.
So older, altered with signs of infection and a positive UA, go ahead and treat. On the other hand, the healthy older patient with vague symptoms and a dirty urine, less likely that that person has a UTI, and we're probably doing harm by treating it. This is a great example of confirmation bias. Patient comes in with symptoms that we can't peg down, but the UA is a little dirty. Let's latch on to that finding and obviate the need for any further workup and assessment.
One area where this can get confusing is the long-term care resident. I don't know why, but the overwhelming majority seem to have a positive UA with bacteria, high urea, positive leukoesterase, positive nitrite, and not just a little positive, a lot positive.
Yeah, the degree of positivity doesn't help, and you'd kind of hope it did. But, you know, if you've got five white cells, you got 10, you got 15, you got 20, it really is not going to help you out. As I said earlier, up to 50% of long-term care residents, if they're women, and especially if they're chronically incontinent, they're going to have asymptomatic bacteria. And then it becomes a clinician's job to try to figure out when they present in the ED, can we really tie this in to a urinary tract infection? And for the most part, you've got to call it a pyelonephritis if you're going to ascribe altered mentation or other systemic symptoms. Simple cystitis and certainly asymptomatic bacteria, by its very definition, are not going to cause systematic symptoms.
All right, it's time to put the nickel down. So you've got a patient, say an elderly patient or an adult patient with a positive UA, but no symptoms. My own thought is, if I don't treat this, something worse is going to happen, like pyelonephritis, like a progressive infection. What would you recommend we do?
I think falling back on watchful waiting is a great idea in a lot of these patients. Some studies have shown 25 to 50% of women with typical cystitis symptoms and positive UAs will have spontaneous resolution of their cystitis just all by themselves within the week.
More huge numbers here that we can't ignore. 50% of healthy women will clear their cystitis in 7 days without antibiotics. That's right, 50%. Clearly, the body has actually developed some systems to fight infection that actually work.
So I think if you intellectually imagine how that could work, it of course has to work, that we evolved as a species, that the timeline of antibiotics has been just the last several generations. And so somehow we had to have a way of clearing these infections all by ourselves. Moreover, the likelihood of progressing from a cystitis to a pyelo, at least in one study, was only 1 in 38 times. So for the most part, the worst case scenario is that they have persistent symptoms. It's really quite unlikely that they're going to progress to a pyelonephritis, which is why it's really quite reasonable to take the watchful wait approach. Oftentimes, a positive urine is not in itself even going to culture out positive. And if it doesn't culture with positive growth, then that clearly is not a urinary tract infection. There was one study that looked at UTIs or supposed UTIs in the emergency department. And 43% of the patients who were diagnosed as a UTI, 95% of them treated with antibiotics, they didn't even have a positive culture. So people who are sort of vaguely ill, not clear urinary tract symptoms, one option is to await the culture and see how they're doing at that time, which of course is a little bit problematic because then you got to call them back. But watchful waiting and follow up with primary care is certainly a reasonable course of action for a lot of these people.
One reason that the reflex to treat is there with a positive UA is because beyond C. diff, the benefits such as not getting sick or not getting pylo outweigh the risks.
Yeah, that's been the general thinking, but there's this whole thought of what's now called collateral damage. So when you treat people with antibiotics, you're really screwing up the ecosystem. So not only is there, as you point out, the risk of C. diff, which in one study of long-term care residents, treatment for a UTI resulted in a 12% incidence of C. diff. So that's a significant morbidity in that population. But there's also the notion that these asymptomatic bacteria that are living happily in the bladder are in harmony with the body and maybe even uroprotective, and they're keeping the more pathogenic bacteria at bay. So if you start killing them off, then the risk of getting infected with much more pathogenic bacteria really starts going up significantly. And then I think one of our notions is that we like to act. We see something, we want to act on it. And we know intellectually that there is a risk of a downside. We know that sometimes patients will get diarrhea, even C. diff, and it can cause other problems down the road. But we seem to think that the benefits outweigh the risk. But if you really look at the global population, you start seeing more of the downside.
Uroprotective bacteria. Basically, these bacteria have made your bladder into a happy home. There's a nice little harmony going on here. These bacteria are quiet neighbors who bring you cookies every once in a while. Maybe they come over and borrow a little brown sugar. But introduce an antibiotic and all hell breaks loose. The normal occupants are evicted and in moves the noisy college kids.
You're talking about asymptomatic bacteria living in the bladder, maybe even potentially uroprotective bacteria. But say that person has a positive UA. If it's just an asymptomatic bacteria and it comes back culture positive, one particular organism cultures out, is that not then a UTI?
No, unfortunately, it's not. So the culture, and frankly, this had been my perception before I started really reviewing the literature. The culture does not distinguish between, is this an asymptomatic bacteria or is this an actual infection? So you need the clinical signs and symptoms. And as you can probably imagine, if you've got bacteria hanging out in your bladder and then you take a sample of that and culture it out, those bacteria will be happy to grow in the lab. So the very fact that you've got bacteria grown in the lab on the culture in no way means that the initial urine represented an actual UTI, which gets into the whole notion of when do you send a urine? So I think it's very clear if people come in with urinary tract symptoms, they've got urgency frequency dysuria, or they've got fever, chills, flank pain, all the things we classically associate with actual infection, then they need a urine. But if you've got like that opening woman, she's elderly, she fell, it sounds like a pretty simple mechanical fall. She's got no urinary tract signs or symptoms. She's alert. She's appropriate. She just doesn't need a UA.
Boy, not getting a UA on that patient almost seems blasphemous. Although I guess if you get a urinalysis without the proper clinical setting and it comes back positive, then what does it actually mean? Much like the D-dimer if you got it on somebody with an ankle injury.
For a UA, I think we haven't appreciated that the specificity of a UA for a UTI is actually quite low also. So when you get that positive UA, you don't know whether the patient has a UTI or not. You've got to go back and loop in clinically. So UA, like a D-dimer, is pretty good at ruling out infection. If you get the negative UA, just like you get the negative D-dimer, you can be pretty comfortable that there's no UTI. But when you get the positive result, then you got to go scratch your head and see, is this a true positive or is this really just asymptomatic bacteria?
I want to finish up with a special circumstance that I'm never exactly sure what to do with, and that is the patient with an indwelling catheter. For whatever complaint they come in with, the urine invariably gets sent, like the first thing, and it is 100% of the time positive for everything. White cells, yeast, bacteria, even Where's Waldo is in there sometimes.
Hey, Doc, what's your analysis?
I see a little red and white hat. There's something you don't see every day. No Waldo yet.
Where's Waldo?
So when should we treat, or better yet, when should we even order a UA on somebody with a chronic indwelling catheter? Say it's a young man, paraplegic, and he has come in with an infected decubitus ulcer, and the urine looks a little bit cloudy. He says, yeah, it's a little cloudier than normal.
I think, as you point out, anybody who has instrumentation of their bladder, so certainly anybody who's living with a Foley, a suprapubic catheter, or frankly, even people who do intermittent self-catheterization at home, they have a much higher rate of asymptomatic bacteria. So if a person has had a Foley for a while, and even it's just a week or two or three, then you can expect that you're going to find bacteria, often white cells, and that if you culture it, you're going to grow out bacteria. And once again, you got to decide whether they're clinically infected or not. So if they're not presenting with fever, chills, nausea, vomiting, anything else that would suggest actual infection, then you're really best not to send the urine at all, because you can predict up front it's going to show bacteria and white cells. And then you're going to be in that position of, well, what do I do with this now? And yeah, you could punt it down the road and culture it. And then whoever looks at your cultures 2 days later is going to have the same question to deal with.
Then it's going to be ESBL. Oh my gosh, no antibiotic treats this.
Yeah, so you're going to find that they're colonized with all kinds of garbage that sometimes is only manageable if you truly wanted to treat it with IV antibiotics. So really the best clinical approach is taking a less is more stance, which we're finding is applicable in many arenas, that you just don't send the urine. You don't want to know. You don't have to know. And I think really you can broaden that approach in all kinds of scenarios. I mean, we know that when people come in with belly pain, it's like, this is not a UTI. They've got abdominal pain, they've got tenderness, they've got nausea, vomiting, but they've got no urinary symptoms. Then if you can't clinically tie it in with the UTI, then it's not a UTI, and don't send the urine. Be the investigator that you should be, but just because the surgeon's going to say when you have the positive appendix on the CT, you know, what's the urine show? The answer should be, I didn't send a urine.
Well, I'm not coming down until you do.
One of my colleagues' answer was, what does the urine look like? And the answer was yellow.
So it's 20 years ago. It's 1995. And a young attending, Dave Glazer, is talking with young intern, Rob Orman. And a patient comes in with whatever complaint, and I say, Dave, should I get a UA on this patient? What is the take-home message, the elevator speech, the thing that you want me to carry with me the rest of my career?
The take home is get the UA if they've got signs or symptoms referable to a urinary tract infection, or if, of course, you're working them up for something else that the urine might be helpful. If you think they got a stone or something else along the urinary tract, then get the UA. But don't get the UA just for the vague, don't feel well, feel a little dizzy, had some chest pain, back pain. It just doesn't tie in, and you're going to end up overtreating and hurting a lot of your patients.
Dave Glazer, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Rob.
I think this segment is going to be a game changer for many of us. Too many times we send unnecessary UAs and then latch onto the findings we see there. Like with all tests, all labs, all studies, we need to be judicious. First, make a pretest probability and then decide if the test is going to help push you towards or away from a diagnosis. If the patient doesn't have UTI symptoms, they're not febrile or altered, don't send the UA. Remember those numbers. 20% of older women and 10% of older men will have asymptomatic bacteriuria. And that number leaps up to 50% of women and 40% of men who are in long-term facilities. Bottom line again, don't randomly send a UA. And if a random one is sent, don't just treat the lab, treat the patient.